This podcast helps you to understand the impact of local and national government on public health in early modern Britain. The responses to the plague in the 16th and early 17th centuries were the first examples of national policy on public health. Before that, the monarch and parliament did not really get involved in local matters. When the national policies were introduced, it was still run very much at the local level. Most of the plague orders of 1518, 1578 and 1604 relied on local officials like mayors and aldermen to implement them. Local authorities were responsible for collecting and distributing money for the sick, enforcing the rules on the isolation of plague sufferers, cleaning streets and employing searchers to look for plague. But it was not just the plague that town authorities tackled. Many mayors and aldermen tried to keep their towns clean. We know that in 16th century York, for example, the council introduced lots of local rules to try to keep the town healthy and improve it for everyone. Animals were to be confined instead of roaming the streets. Residents were made responsible for keeping streets clean and gutters clear. Household waste could not be put out for the scavengers until 7 p.m. After 1667, plague never returned to England. No one is quite sure why this happened. Perhaps the most likely explanation is that effective measures in Europe to stop the spread of plague meant that the disease no longer spread to England. Whatever the reason, people in England were free from plague for the first time in 400 years. They, of course, did not know it. Once the threat of plague passed in the 1670s, town corporations were able to concentrate on improving towns to make them nicer places to live. From 1670 to 1750, local authorities made big improvements to the centres of their towns in order to cope with the growing number of people, carriages and carts. Many councils encouraged builders to construct streets and squares of large terraced houses where wealthy people could live. Many more streets were now paved with stone and lines of posts marked off footways for pedestrians. Oil-burning street lamps first appeared in London in the 1680s. By 1750, most towns had lighting in their main streets. Hugh Middleton had built a huge reservoir in London in 1609, and so by 1750, several water companies in London and in other towns piped water into the homes of those who could afford an annual subscription. When councils were improving town centres, they were not really motivated by concerns about health. They just wanted to make their towns more pleasant. People had not yet made the link between dirt and disease, so street cleaning was mainly an attempt to reduce mess and smell. Although bad smells were thought to contribute to miasma, the focus was on the main streets and the well-to-do areas. Poorer neighbourhoods were mainly unpaved and unlit, and people in those areas were dependent on conduits and water cellars for their water, whereas some richer people could pay to have water piped into their homes. But rich or poor, the problem of sewage disposal was still very much an issue. People were still reliant on cesspits that leaked, stank, and required emptying. Despite the rapid growth of the towns, it would be another 100 years before a solution to the waste problem would be solved.
This podcast is from Hodder GCSE History, Dynamic Learning, and is copyright Hodder and Stoughton.